You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Steve Rysom. This week, the La Crosse chapter of the Wisconsin League of Women Voters hosted a program on the Affordable Care Act that critics call Obamacare. Members had questions about the act. Sheila Garrity is a league member who helped organize the event.
Well, obviously, the more information we all have, the better. It's the law now, so we need to understand it and all the different pieces and how they move about. People with children who are, say, age 25 have different interests than people who are 65 or people who are approaching retirement. So I think everybody has to translate the Affordable Care Act into their own personal situations.
Kevin Kane is a health organizer with the Citizen Action of Wisconsin, a nonprofit organization based in Milwaukee. He's done over 80 presentations in the last year to community groups throughout the state.
The administration did not do a great job of helping to promote this law. It's a very large law. It helps cover about 18% of the economy, and so it had to be a really large law. And so Citizen Action came in and started doing these presentations and explaining it because no one else was.
La Crosse League of Women Voters member Nancy Hill says she's concerned the Affordable Care Act is a topic that stirs a lot of strong emotions. Yet people seem to not know enough about it.
We're used to not doing as much reading as we should and not looking up the information as much as we should. We catch a soundbite here and there and we catch somebody's emotions, but we really need to do our own homework.
Good morning, everybody. Can everyone hear me okay? There's a microphone, but it's not broadcasting.
In part of his presentation, Kane says the Affordable Care Act is based on the proposition that health care is provided to the people. They should be responsible in getting coverage instead of shifting cost on the rest of Americans.
Those individuals who chose never to get health insurance and just went to emergency rooms or were on ended up pushing costs on the rest of us. The average family pays a lot more just to pays more in normal insurance to help cover other individuals. Hospitals have to recoup their costs somehow, so they charge us more. So people like to scream and say, you know, why should I be forced to pay for someone else's health insurance? You already are.
Kane says the health care law comes in two stages. First, it outlaws health insurance abuses and requires accountability from insurance companies.
Stage two, in 2014, it guarantees every American has a place to go to get quality, affordable coverage. And it permanently outlaws health insurance industry discrimination, example of which is pre-existing condition discrimination. The Affordable Care Act ends discrimination for 1.3 million Wisconsinites. We just did a research report and showed how many people in the state have a pre-existing health care condition. More than 1.3 million Wisconsinites under 65 have been diagnosed with a pre-existing condition that, without health care reform, would lead to denials of coverage if they ever chose to buy insurance on their own.
In another part of his presentation, Kane said for those who still have trouble getting health insurance, Badger Care will increase its member load.
No more loopholes or complicated eligibility requirements for Badger Care, and no waiting lists. Everyone below the income line will get Badger Care. No more of this, do you have a child, are you a child, are you pregnant, are you childless? That's gone. Right now there are about 140,000 people on the Badger Care waiting list. In 2014 there won't be a waiting list.
After Kane's presentation, La Crosse League of Women Voters member Mary Garvis said affordable health care should be the right for every American. Critics say the act is too far-reaching, that it tries to do too much. Garvis doesn't agree.
I'm an old lady, and I'm 72, and so I have a lot of history. And the United States has tackled greater problems than health care. We handled major wars. We worked our way through civil rights and made a lot of gains, not that it's over.
The idea is to allow people to get timely care, says Dr. Jim Glasser of La Crosse, who attended the presentation. He says getting help early can keep people with such conditions, such as diabetes or hypertension, from needing much costlier care down the road.
And these are the people that are not receiving medical care, don't show up until they are seriously ill or near death. And that, I think, is the unconscionable situation.
You can learn more about the Affordable Health Care Act by going to the Citizen Action of Wisconsin's website. Steve Rysom, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The next 2 months are sure to be dominated by the politics of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. They need to keep or repeal health care reform measures signed into law in 2010 are sure to be a central theme in not only the presidential election, but U.S. Senate and congressional races across the country. Something often overlooked during the debate is what's actually in the law and how the changes stand to affect the average citizen. On today's show, we hope to answer some of the questions about what's in the Affordable Care Act. Our guest is Roberta Ripertella. She's a professor at UW-Madison's School of Human Ecology and a UW Extension Health Policy Specialist. It's her job to explain how these complex healthcare changes will actually help people now and in the future. Roberta, thank you so much for joining us today. Hopefully all the technical difficulties have been sorted out.
Well, we hope so. I'm here, Maureen. Thanks.
A lot of varying emotional and political opinions run rampant within talks of the Affordable Care Act. But in your mind, what is the health care reform law all about?
Okay. I really am going to try to stay apolitical about this. My focus is on the fact that this is, right now, the law of the land, and it is already having major impacts on our health care delivery system and on the insurance plans that lots of people already have. And so let's try to focus on that. For the most part, the Affordable Care Act, which is called the ACA, ACA, Obamacare, some people call it the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, was passed in March of 2010. So we are already 2 years into this legislation. It's mostly about insurance to improve and secure coverage. It was a legislative response that regulates insurers and puts in place new insurance entities, and I'm sure we'll talk about those exchanges, yet it's leaving the current free market health insurance system largely in place as the base for those changes. So there are going to be new ways and new rules to protect consumers in the insurance market. There are new eligibility rules for Medicaid. There are changes in Medicare. There are actually changes even in the VA, the Veterans Administration system. The bill is also concerned, the law is also concerned with access. What does the infrastructure of our health care delivery system look like? How is it funded and supported? What does the workforce look like, those that are actually going to be providing the care? So it's an extremely comprehensive piece of legislation that was passed.
And some aspects of the law have been in place since 2010. I'm wondering if you can sort of give us a quick rundown about some of the immediate changes that consumers saw with the implementation of this law.
Sure. The things that people saw most directly because of ACA had to do with what happened in their insurance plans. So right now, there's no exclusion for pre-existing conditions for children. That will go into effect in 2014 for adults. But let's just take a minute and think about how really progressive that is and expansive in terms of insurance. A lot of people want to buy insurance, even if it's expensive, because they understand how important it is, and it's usually people who have some type of a health condition. When it comes to children, to have a child who has asthma, which is probably the most common kind of pre-existing condition that in the past that excluded a child from insurance, that now cannot exist. An insurance company has to offer them an insurance plan. So no exclusion for pre-existing conditions for children is at the top of a lot of people's list. The other thing that most folks know about is that young adults can stay on their parents' insurance till the age of 26. That's something that in Wisconsin we used to have until the age of 27, or at least used to. For a few years, we had put that in place, which would require plans to cover those adult children who often aren't working in jobs yet that are going to give them insurance. So that's part of ACA. There are free preventive care services for those who have insurance that have just kicked into effect this summer. There are no lifetime limits allowed because of ACA, and no annual limits on insurance coverage of health care expenses. There used to be a max that they would pay out every year. That's no longer true. They're not allowed to have gender-based insurance premiums. Women have always been charged more for health insurance. Employers being required to provide insurance as an option. Those are the kinds of things that most people know about the Affordable Care Act. But then there were some other things that were in effect that people didn't know went into effect, and they had to do with regulations on the market so that the insurers were now subject to which has to do with how much their premium is allowed to be, so that there's a process for an annual review looking at unreasonable premium increases, and this is happening in every state. There's also something called a medical loss ratio, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit more later, but that's something that went into effect also this summer, so that there are things that happened to the insurance industry in ways that they had to change, and there were consumer protections also put into place.
There are a number of healthcare changes, ones that even rolled out at the beginning of the month regarding women's health and the 80-20 rule, but then there's also more changes coming in 2014. What else should healthcare consumers be expecting with the Affordable Care Act?
Well, the other major things that will be put in place are the health exchanges, and they have to be in place by January 2014. And this will be a major change in the marketplace of insurance policies. So how will people be able to get their insurance and from where? So that means that by 2014, every state, if they set it up themselves or if the federal government helps them set it up, will have a marketplace that will be web-based, where people will be able to go and search for the kind of health insurance plan they want and sign up and enroll in that marketplace using the Internet. So that's going to be a major new change for how people are going to be able to get their insurance.
I want to dive into a few aspects of the Affordable Care Act with you. And maybe first we can start with the puzzle that is the insurance portion of it. And I want to start with a scenario. So if you have someone that's uninsured, they've never had health insurance, where are they to turn to if they decide that they can't afford insurance and they're going to purchase it?
Okay, so this gets a little complicated.
Okay.
Because in most cases, we'll assume that that person is going to be eligible to buy insurance through the exchange. But there are so many things that can happen beforehand that will say that person will not have to buy through the exchange. The major one is that all businesses are going to be encouraged and given incentives and disincentives to make sure that they as a business insure somebody. So that person who might go to the exchange might actually now be working for an employer who is going to offer them health insurance. So where they're going to go as an uninsured person is right where they are, and all of a sudden their employer is going to be giving them insurance. If they are under a certain income level, and that would be 138% of the poverty line, which really affects an awful lot of adults in Wisconsin, they may be able to go to our Medicaid program. This is yet to be determined. We are one of the states that's kind of waiting out the political arena to see what happens in November, if we still are going to have Obamacare, or if somehow that will be rescinded. And so there are some people who might be able to purchase insurance through their employer, some who are going to go to the exchanges, and some who actually may be eligible for Medicaid, and that will depend on what state they're in. So to tell me that a person is uninsured, where are they going to go, is really going to depend on who they are and what the particulars of their situation is, what state they live in, what their employer is offering to them. But there will be many more options for them than there had been before Obamacare.
And is there a difference between these exchanges and then also if someone went to a private insurance business that already exists right now?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, those private insurers are probably going to disappear. What's going to happen is that, not that the private insurers will disappear, they will still be there, but how they offer their product to the public. There are people who get insurance through their employer, and so those are larger group plans that the insurance companies go and they negotiate with a particular business, and they come up with a product that's an insurance product, and they say, we'll cover this many of your employees for this much money. Other people who don't work in a business that offers it go right now to an independent insurance agent to try to find an insurance plan. That's what's going to change. They're no longer going to go to that independent insurer. They're going to go to the exchange because all of those insurers are now going to compete for this pool of people. The reason why the exchanges are going to work is that health insurance, like other kinds of insurance, is risky business. And you want to have healthy people in that pool as well as accepting that there's going to be people who are going to use a lot of health care in that pool. But you want to balance that out so that as a provider of insurance, you're still going to make money, so that you're going to try to balance your risks. And the advantage of an exchange is that it will increase the pool. So anybody who went as an individual before to buy insurance, they were risk-adjusted for who they are, the same way it happens right now for auto insurance. If you're a risky driver, then your auto insurance premiums go up. Well, in these insurance exchanges, they're going to pool people, and so you're going to be buying into a plan where there are going to be a lot of people, and you will have the advantage of the smoothing out of the insurance premium across those people who are healthier and not as healthy. That's why the health insurance exchange is supposed to operate for everybody who is uninsured. It's the place that they're going to be able to go, the marketplace they'll go to, where the premiums will be more affordable for them, because in case they are a high-risk person, they're going to be in a pool with lower-risk people. So everybody will be able to kind of spread those costs, smooth the risk, and be able to purchase in that pool. I don't expect that you will see anybody going to the independent insurance agent. All of those people will try to get their products up into that exchange, and then they're going to compete with everybody else who was in that exchange. Because think about the advantage now for consumers. Rather than having to go from insurance agent to insurance agent to see who gives you the best deal as an individual looking to be insured, you can now go look in one place online the same way people shop for auto insurance. And you'll be able to decide which of those plans works best for you, and you will be in that pool with everybody else who is also willing to go into that insurance plan, and that will keep the premiums down.
Well, and I'll be curious to see if the health insurance companies will start putting together packages or at least websites and make it easy for consumers to pick, you know, this is the plan I want, kind of like how the auto insurance companies have.
Yes and no. Yes, they will need to do that, but I don't think they're going to do it individually, Maureen. My understanding is they will do it as part of the full exchange. So it could be that you will click to their website where they can show you all of their options. But anybody who wants to be a player in the insurance industry is going to need to get to themselves into that health insurance exchange and get up online with whatever that website looks like. And every state will be different.
So then there are some people who will decide that they don't want to purchase health insurance, and they could be penalized for that, since the Supreme Court decided that if someone did not buy into the system, that would be a tax. Can you talk about the penalties associated with not buying health care?
Yes. So, yes, you are indeed right. In June, the Supreme Court did say that the individual mandate is constitutional because it imposed a fine for not complying with something that is a legitimate federal taxing authority. So they're now calling it a tax, or they're actually calling it a shared responsibility payment, I believe. And so those are going to be fines imposed for people who choose not to get insurance if they're not exempt. And the fines range from, it's about $100 for every $10,000 of income that somebody makes, up to whatever the national average premium would be, so you wouldn't pay more than the premium. Some of us would say that those fines are really not a disincentive, that it's cheaper for some people to just pay $100 a year as a fine than to buy insurance, which is going to cost them several hundred dollars a month. But, of course, you would be able to purchase an insurance product that would be less expensive than you ever had before as an option because of the exchanges. The people who are going to be exempt are those for whom a premium in a policy that's offered in the exchanges would exceed 8% of their annual adjusted gross income. So if it's going to be more expensive for you to buy a premium than 8% of your adjusted gross, you won't be fined. American Indian tribes are exempt. There are other financial hardship waiveries, and they will be people who unexpectedly have a financial hardship, and those who've lacked insurance for less than 3 months. So some people won't be fined, but yes, there is this disincentive, which is really an incentive to get everybody, as many people as possible, to buy into the exchanges.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. Today, I'm talking with Roberta Ribertella. She's a professor at UW-Madison, and she's also a health policy specialist with UW-Extension. Today, we're talking about the Affordable Care Act and what it means for consumers. And beyond consumers, there's also the business aspect of the Affordable Care Act. How is this going to affect small businesses, maybe even large businesses, too? Do you think that there will be more businesses offering insurance for their employees?
Yeah, there are already businesses, small businesses in particular, that are receiving tax credits. This is a six-year program that began in 2010, and those are employers that must have average wages of less than $50,000 and pay 50% of their employer premium, that they would be allowed to offer health care where they would get a credit of up to 35% of their costs, all the way up to 50% of their costs by 2014. And there were 90,000 Wisconsin nonprofit, for-profit, smaller businesses that were eligible for this. I'm sorry, I don't know how many signed on to that, but so it was a way to incentivize those small employers. Let's think about why an employer might even want to do that. As a consumer, we want our employers to pay for our health insurance or certainly to help us. But when you're in the business world where you're competing for the best employees, to give them this kind of a health insurance benefit is an incentive to have them come work for you. It's very difficult to compete in a very competitive workplace if your competitor is offering a health insurance package and you're not. But small businesses, particularly those who are just getting started, often don't have enough capital. So this is a way to kind of give them a jump start to allow them to offer this as a benefit to get in the best, the brightest employees where they're also offering them health insurance.
Go ahead.
So that's an incentive for small employers right now.
And do you think insurance companies themselves will be changing much in light of the Affordable Care Act?
That's a good question. I think that they're right now on the precipice of deciding whether or not our state or other states are going to offer their own exchanges and what they're going to look like. It, in fact, is the insurance companies that have the most to do to position themselves to be ready. So they're very anxious that we're coming up against that deadline. And, yes, I do think they're going to need to change their products. This was advantageous for insurance companies because it was going to give them millions more participants, millions more of their purchasers of their health insurance policies. So this is very good for them if they have more people in the pool. So they're going to position themselves in whatever ways they need to change what their insurance product looks like, also taking into account the new requirements for them about how much rate increases they can have and the kinds of things they're mandated to cover, because now they're mandated to cover preventive health services. So, yes, they are changing what their packages look like, what their premiums are going to be, and hoping to pull in a larger base of covered lives. That's what they call us. We're covered lives for them.
And, I mean, will pricing become more competitive? Will costs end up going down? I know that's one of the arguments for the Affordable Care Act, but do you see that happening?
Well, let's think about what's causing costs to go up right now. Some of us would say a good deal of what happens with cost has to do with price of the product and how much it is utilized. So if people are going to the doctor more often, and those doctor health care itself is going to go up. The premiums have some relationship to what the costs of the product are. So if the costs of health care are rising, the costs of the premiums are going to have to go up. But the more people you have in the pool, you can spread those costs. So we may see an evening out for a while of trying to make the premiums more affordable. At the same time, if we don't get a handle on what's happening with the price and the use of those services, this may be unsustainable.
And Roberta, we had listeners email us questions before you coming on, and we got one question from a listener who asked, if the Affordable Care Act is to make healthcare more affordable, do we need to accept less? Less high-tech testing, cutting-edge drug development, and less getting whatever we think we deserve. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let me tell you the way the Affordable Care Act tries to get around that.
Okay.
There are incentives for a new entity called an accountable care organization. And this is happening really full force. You see a lot of the managed care systems right now collaborating with each other, working closely with doctors, very much looking at evidence-based medicine to see what can we really do more effectively over the long run to save costs. So it's the incentives for groups in Medicare mostly right now with these accountable care organizations, but there's a hope that they will transfer over for the rest of the population as well to really work on holding those costs down. And yes, it would probably mean limiting the kinds of services we use that are shown to be ineffective and not cost effective. So that's the way in which the Act itself is trying to get its hand around whether or not we're using health care services appropriately. But yes, to your caller's question, there's a lot of evidence to think that we are overusing care and using it inappropriately. Some people feel that once we get some of the uninsured into the pool of being insured, we will see major changes in how much it costs us healthcare system, because what you have right now is a lot of pent-up demand, and you have the uninsured people using healthcare, but they use it at the wrong stage. They go to the emergency room. It's much more expensive. If you get those people into the system earlier, if you focus on preventive care or even maintenance of care, a lot of diabetics are uninsured. If you maintain their care by giving them prescription drugs, they're not going to show up in diabetic shock the emergency room. Same thing with asthma patients. So those are the ways in which having insurance will help keep down the need for more services and more costs.
Roberta, we're going to take a quick break, but coming up next, we'll continue our discussion with UW-Madison School of Human Ecology Professor and UW Extension Health Policy Specialist Roberta Rippertella. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum.